Welcome to the 7th edition of the Smuggler's Den. I'm your host, Tiny Grimes, and I'm joined today, as always, by...
Ben Tully, who goes by Scarlet Knight on all of the boards that are required to be a fan of this game.
Yeah, and it does seem like there's at least three, right?
There does seem to be a lot of boards that I have to keep track of.
So we've got FFG, Card Game DB, and Board Game Geek. And if anyone is aware of a fourth place I should be going to get my Star Wars information, let me know.
Well, I know one that people haven't really been starting up yet, but I personally like it because I'm, being so much younger than you, Tiny, of that generation. So there is actually a Reddit subreddit for Star Wars LCG. It's our Star Wars LCG. You get a lot of links in there. It's not a lot of content, kind of comes out, an hour or two after everything else gets posted on all the other boards. You'll see an update on the Reddit subreddit. But, that'd be cool if that was a thriving community as well.
I'll take your word on that, whatever Reddit is.
Whatever Reddit is.
Okay, so moving on. I started a new feature on the Facebook page just today, and it's essentially I'm going to put up a card maybe once a week, maybe more often, depending on how popular it is. And what I'm asking our listeners to do is to rate this card in two ways. Number one, if it was in a vacuum, what would you rate this card on its own out of five? Number two, how do you rate this card given the knowledge of the pod that it's in? So, for instance, you may love a card on its own and say it's a five. However, it's in a completely unplayable pod, so it gets downgraded to, say, a two. This week, I put up the heavy blaster emplacement.
And you've told everybody that you will not give your opinion on this card.
What I have told them is when we get 10 listeners to comment on the card, that's when I'll jump in with my opinion. I don't want my opinion to skew any opinions that our audience might have.
And so it's just your opinion. My opinion doesn't matter in this situation. Is that what you're saying?
I am hoping you will add your opinion as well.
The other good news for this week is that Nate French, one of the key designers for the Star Wars LCG, has agreed to come on our show and answer not only our questions, but listener questions. So if you have any questions for Nate that you want to ask that you feel will really shape the discussion and help us add insight into what FFG's overall goal is with the Star Wars LCG, feel free to contact us. You can message us on the Facebook page. You can also message us at our email address, which is smugglersdenpodcast@gmail.com.
Yep, should be a great interview. Really looking forward to it. So we have been running a league, and I think we've talked about this before, but I just want to talk about it a little bit. We have one more week to go, and our league is actually growing pretty fast. We're up to 18 people. Ben, did the league start with, say, you, me, and like two guys who played Thrones with us that we were hoping to convert to Star Wars players? Does that sound like the accurate start of our league?
Yeah, we had about five people in that first week. Well, right, because we had that transition, right, where we had Star Wars came out. There were a couple of us who were pretty excited about it. We started playing it. And then, everybody kind of showed up, and we weren't really sure what it was going to do. And we started the league, and that's when we saw the conversion, right? Everybody who was kind of there on the edge, we just started getting more and more players, people who came week after week, who were there on a Wednesday night and were like, okay, I'm going to be part of this. There seems to be a lot of people here. And it's grown. We've added at least, two to three people each week for the last 3 weeks now. There was like a lull in the middle, and it's kind of picked up as more people have been there more consistently.
Yeah, it's also really people just walking by and going, oh, wow, there's a lot of people playing this game. And so now when I walk up to these people who have looked and just sort of randomly ask them, hey, have you ever played before? And they say no. And I say, hey, would you like me to loan you a deck and you can play tonight? They're more excited because they see it's a big community. It's not just four dorks playing Star Wars, but it's this massive crowd of people who apparently love this game. So it really seems like once you get your league over that hump, then it just kind of starts steamrolling a bit.
Yeah, and I see a lot of potential for the store itself, and I've talked about this before, in terms of just having an overall FFG night where you can have multiple concurrent leagues with the different games, because at this point, now what I'm personally trying to do is convert those people the four nerdy people at the back of the room who are playing Netrunner. And I want to go up to them and be like, hey, Netrunner is great, and I wish I was playing Netrunner. But you should also think about joining Star Wars, because that just started as well. And we have a big group that plays it already. And so I'm hoping with a little bit of time and maybe some convincing, you know, we can start generating a huge kind of co-pool of multiple games being played at the same time.
Yep. And we're already on our way there. We're already playing Game of Thrones and Star Wars. So we're really just getting the Netrunner players in as well.
And potentially even the X-Wing miniature people.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So just a heads up on how to run a league. You know, basically reach out to the people at the store. Ask them if they want to play. Have an extra deck that you can loan them. Last week, I had my good Jedi deck, and I just loaned it to this brand new guy who'd never played before. And then I wasn't able to play light side the rest of the night, basically, because I didn't have another deck, but I was fine with that. And have some cool prizes. So I printed up a really cool playmat that we're offering to first place. We're also offering a Kingdom Con badge to first place. If you don't know what Kingdom Con is, what is that again, Ben?
If you don't know what it is, Kingdom Con, which you can find at kingdom-con.com, is a gaming convention that is held just outside of downtown San Diego, pretty close to the San Diego International Airport, where this year there'll be a number of FFG regional games taking place. So there'll be Star Wars on Friday night, Game of Thrones on Saturday, Netrunner on Sunday, as well as most of the other. It's nice and fun, and you know, Tiny and I will be there. So that's definitely a reason you should come and hang out.
Yep, we've got people coming in from Northern California, from Arizona, from Nevada. It's basically the first big regional event of the season. I'm calling it Mini Worlds. If you're anywhere in range to get over to it, come on over. We'd love to have you. All right, so those are the prizes, the big ones, and then we're giving out league kit stuff as well. So really quick, I'm going to look at the results of the league. And it looks like so far, as predicted, the dark side is winning more often than the light side. The dark side has 65 wins, whereas the light side has 54. And that sounds like quite a bit, but the winning percentage is only 55. So the difference isn't that high, but it does seem like the dark side has a slight edge.
It does seem like it has a slight edge. I feel like most people have that gut reaction when they've played a couple games. It tends to go to the dark side. However, it's one of those things where it tends to go to the dark side, but when it goes to the light side, it's sometimes a complete and total smackdown.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about our league is those stats are even more skewed because I've been playing a really strong light side deck and experimenting with dark side decks, so I kind of feel like the dark side might have won even more had I not gone 11-6 with the dark side, but I guess we'll have to leave that to see.
But and conversely, I have been playing exclusively the strong dark side deck and toying around with light side decks. And so I myself feel that the light side might have more wins if I had just stuck exclusively with the deck that we have laid out in episode, is it 3 or 4, with the Han and the Jedis and played that deck exclusively. But I've been trying to work in Rebels as much as I can and see what mixture of Rebel and Jedi objectives work best to try and make a deck that maybe has the strengths of both. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it only works in certain deck types, but I'm still been trying to figure that out myself.
Yep. We'll have to see if those are weighting it or if the dark side is just a little bit better. I tend to think the light side is actually better with the deck that I've built. And then I also think with the new cards that Rebels are going to be really strong. But I guess we'll have to see. Yep. So we have one more week left in the league. And then we have the tournament. Ben, who do you see as the front runners for this tournament? Do you think you and I have a good shot at winning this thing, or do you think there's enough people in this tournament that have really improved a lot that we are no longer the front runners?
We've seen a lot of improvement from a lot of the players. I think that improvement has tracked with improvement for each of us, though. So if I had to put money on it, I would say one of us is going to take it down. I feel terrible saying that because so many players have improved so much, and there's always a possibility that the deck just kind of craps out when it's you need it to do something the most. Like, it's consistently done something for game after game after game, and all of a sudden all you have are your weenies and no protectors and no tricks, and the whole deck just kind of just doesn't do it for you. So there's always that possibility. I've seen that happen plenty of times, and so I don't want to say definitively it's going to be one of us, because I think there's a possibility that type of thing could happen. And one of the very new good players that we have and have seen grow throughout the course of the league has a chance to really snatch away that first place prize from both of us.
Yeah, I'm certain you won't win. Like, that I know.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
So then it's a question of whether I'm going to win or the field. And I think I'm going to take the field on this one, because, like you said, I've had a number of games where this game, more than Game of Thrones, because of the limited card pool, I think bad things can just happen to you. And so I think there's a real good chance that something bad will happen to me. I think I'll do well in the tournament, but I think there's a real good chance someone else is going to win the tournament. So it should be a lot of fun, and it's going to be really interesting with the new tournament rules to see if they help mitigate those games. So what I think is interesting is that if my beloved Jedi deck just doesn't work out that game and has its worst case scenario, then what I can still do is win with the dark side and then just try to knock out as many objectives as I can before I lose this worst case scenario. Simply because with the new tournament rules, if you can knock out more objectives and both dark sides win, then you get that special advantage point. And so it is good that there's now some way to deal with the worst case scenario. And the reverse is true if you get the dark side and you just can't find your Vader or Palpatine. You just try to get that dial to go as high as you can before you lose. Just stall, 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 and do everything you can so that if you can then turn around and win with the light side, you can get your bonus point.
It's going to make for some interesting deck decisions, even more so than you're already seeing now, right? Because you have a situation now where you're trying to build the best deck that can win consistently, but knowing that sometimes it doesn't happen and that you can still pull out a win over your opponent if you somehow meet these other criteria. You know, are we going to see more situations? I think personally that the dark side deck that I've been running, the variant that I've been running that involves the Devastator, would be much better suited in a situation where both dark sides win, right? Where if my dark side wins and your dark side wins and I have the Devastator and I have that ability to maybe take out slightly more objectives than you did, I think that's a much bigger advantage.
Yeah, I'm actually worried about that, because you're right. Your dark side deck knocks out objectives. Mine often just gets to 12 without ever knocking out objectives. So even if I win, if you beat me with your dark side deck and the tiebreaker is objectives knocked out, you're almost certainly going to have more than me. Because, to be honest, both of my decks aren't great at knocking out objectives. And so I am actually worried that my decks might put me at a disadvantage in this new tournament rules.
Which will be interesting. I know we're going to talk about the deck that I currently am playing that's half Rebel and or some Rebel and some Jedi. That deck consistently knocks out objectives pretty early and pretty fast. And so it might not win consistently. This is what I'm going with here. It might not win consistently, but it can win fast and therefore keep the dial down. So that way, if then I lose my dark side match against you and your light side deck does well, but it does well and takes until the dial's at 10 and mine only took until it was at 6, I feel like, you know, there's a lot of decisions that need to be made when you're thinking about decks nowadays.
Yeah, I don't think I'll think about this too much for our little mini tournament, because it's more of a fun cap to a fun league. But certainly going into regionals, I will be taking these tournament rules into account and rethinking my decks. I may not be playing either of these decks because, like you said, both are anti-rules decks. The dark side deck doesn't knock out any objectives. The light side deck is a slow deck. And so I'm definitely worried that both of them are not set up to win in a regional format.
Just an interesting thing to think about, I guess.
Yep. So that's it for our league. Next, I'd like to look at something that I find important in every game I'm playing, especially I've been playing Game of Thrones. This is what I feel like gives me an advantage over some other players. I may not have all of the skill that they have. I may not have all the experience, but I always master the matchups. And with a limited card pool, this is a lot easier. And what I mean by that is you really need to know what cards are important in your deck versus each of the different archetypes. So, for example, if you are playing a Jedi deck, you need to know what cards are important against Sith, what cards are important against Navy, which cards you need to hang on to, what you need to be careful of. So, as an example, if you're playing against the Navy, you need to hold your cancels for two cards, Detained and Super Laser. Now, if you see that they are not running the Detained pod, that's one thing you don't have to worry about. And so you really only need to hold one cancel for that one Super Laser. Because as we've talked about before, if they have a Devastator on the board and they have the other guy who can pump up the dial, one Super Laser could be five damage, boom, just like that, game over. So you need to have a cancel for that.
I do really like how it's the Devastator and that other guy. That's a very interesting card name. I'm really surprised that FFG did that.
He is a worthless chud who bumps the dial. So we'll just call him
that other guy.
WCBD.
So an example that I will probably have a chance to talk about later when Tiny interviews me about my current Rebel deck. One of the things that I think about a lot is the use of Heroic Sacrifice. So it's a card that against the Sith is almost completely useless. It's a card that allows you to sacrifice one of your vehicles to take out one of your opponent's vehicles that's cost four or less. And I've had it in my hand against a Sith deck, especially Tiny Sith deck, which doesn't even run the Devastator, and just known right off the bat that this card is going to be useless. And it either goes into the edge battle, because I think it has two Force icons, or it's discarded on that first turn. Against the Navy, where they tend to have people who play the Endor Gambit because the AT-STs are so strong, Heroic Sacrifice really is a key thing. So your opponent can pay three to get down to AT-ST. You can pay much less for either one for an X-Wing or two for like an A-Wing or a Y-Wing. Get off the attack, and then instead of having the AT-ST still around, either your opponent didn't defend with it or you attacked with two and your opponent defended with it, and it's going to take out your second attacker. You can attack with the first one, use Heroic Sacrifice, take out your opponent's AT-ST, and all of a sudden you have a clear board. So it's one of those things where in some matchups it's great, and another matchup is almost completely worthless.
Yeah, that reminds me of Jedi Mind Trick for the Jedi. It's basically, against Sith, it's the best card in the deck, period. If you can lock down a Palpatine turn one, if they leverage all their resources, and you can double focus him and then keep focusing him, you just win. Whereas against Navy, you're pretty much going, hey, are you playing Mahdi or Tarkin? And are you going to play them early? If not, ugh, I've got this mind trick. Unless, of course, it's a trooper deck. But then against a trooper deck, you're like, okay, you have 8,000 troopers and I have one Jedi mind trick. What do I do? Some other things to keep in mind with this are Rebel Assault. And here's my take on that. Rebel Assault is always amazing. I actually played a guy that he discarded it in his opening hand to draw another card. And I looked at him like he was a Martian. I just couldn't believe that you would throw away Rebel Assault in any matchup. That card is just phenomenal.
My problem always with Rebel Assault is that it paralyzes me with decisions. Do I try and do a damage to a character that has, or a unit that has three health capacity and then take it out with Rebel Assault? Do I save it until there's a weakened objective and then blow that objective up without anybody realizing that's what was going to happen? Do I just use it right off the bat every time to take out Mahdi when I have the opportunity? I am always paralyzed by decisions when it comes to Rebel Assault, and I never think I make the right one, ever.
Yeah, unfortunately, I never get to use the card. I know for me, it would be matchup-based. So, like, my example would be if you're playing Sith, you have to reduce their resources at the start. So if they go, pay three, put Mahdi out, I would instantly Rebel Assault him just to completely take away their first turn. Now they only have one resource left. Their turn's probably over. They're probably not even getting the force back. They're pretty much boned. However, if it's, say, turn five and they've got a bunch of resources out and then they put Mahdi out, there's no way I would Rebel Assault him because I would say, okay, you already got those resources you needed. Now I'm going to save this for Palpatine or for an objective or for some really critical battle. And this goes into what we talked about last week, losing the edge battles. if you have Rebel Assault, you could lose the edge battle. Then before they strike, you just go, boop, Rebel Assault the guy who they thought they were going to strike with. You won the edge battle, but he didn't do anything anyway.
Right. So far with the Rebel deck, what has happened is I've had it in my hand and waiting for that opportune moment, and then I just win without ever having used it. Set in my hand that whole time, and I'm like, oh, I have Rebel Assault. This is going to be so good. And then I win the game, and I'm like, oh, I didn't have to use Rebel Assault for that. That seems anticlimactic. I don't know why. I don't know why I sat here holding it in my hand for the last three turns.
Yeah, and of course in this game, holding cards means you're not drawing cards. And so, it really is that tough situation of knowing matchups and when you should best play it. Another example is knowing what objectives you're supposed to be taking out. So, for instance, I was playing my Sith Navy deck, and I had Death and Despair out, I had Defense Protocol out, and I had another objective out. And out of those three, Defense Protocol is the one you want to go for. It does a damage to any guy I want every turn. And for some reason, this person is attacking Death and Despair, which is just basically a blank text objective that I can get two resources out of. But if I do that, then it's locked down for another turn. So it's really knowing which objective do you go for depending on their deck.
And as a counterexample, if you're the dark side playing against the light side, one of the objectives that are really strong against the dark side is questionable contacts. When I play, it tends to be the objective I direct my damage towards as much as possible, because of the ability of where if you damage a unit but don't kill it, and all of a sudden that damage can then be reflected back onto your own characters, it becomes really strong for the light side, and is one of those things that I feel has to be dealt with right away. Otherwise, you leave yourself into this position where anytime you think you have enough damage, but it gets lightsaber deflected, now all that damage that you've done is coming back to your characters, and it really leaves you in a position that's much weaker than if you can just get rid of the objective.
Yeah, definitely. Another part of this matchup is planning. If you are playing against a Navy fighter deck and they have a bunch of cards in hand, they do have stuff like Talon Roll. They're going to be pulling off focus from their guy. So when you go into a battle, you can't go in saying, okay, they only have this much damage, Luke will survive. You have to realize that one of those guys is going to strike Luke two times, or one of those guys is going to strike the objective two times. And so the objective may look like it's not going to die, but it is going to die. And these are the various matchup scenarios that you have to learn and just know by the back of your hand by the time you get into tournaments. If they're playing Rebels and they have three resources open, Akbar's coming. Know that. Don't block with seven one-damage capacity guys. They're all dead.
Did you know Akbar was coming in the game that we played the other night?
I don't remember, but probably. I mean, if you have three resources open, I'm pretty much planning on Akbar coming.
I had three resources open on Fleet Command Center, though, so was that obvious?
Yes, because it's happened to me a couple times when it wasn't obvious, so now it has become obvious.
Oh, well, there you go.
And the same is true for the dark side. If they have three open and they're playing a Navy deck, they're probably going to put the Backstabber in, but he's not nearly as game-changing as Akbar can be.
I was going to say, with three resources open from the dark side, there's a lot of things that could be coming your way that would be unpleasant, not just Backstabber.
Definitely Force Lightning out of the blue should always be expected. So what we talked about last time or a couple weeks ago was leaving a resource open to trick your opponent into thinking you have stuff. So you need to know all the things they might have. If they leave one Jedi resource available, Ben, what cards are you thinking that they might have in their hand that they're saving for you?
It's going to be a Jedi mind trick that they're saving for me right there.
Okay, it could be a Jedi mind trick. What else could it be?
What else could it be?
How about a cancel?
Is Counter-Strike one?
Yep, Counter-Strike is one.
God, I haven't played those decks in so long.
So when they leave one back, it's really scary if you're the Sith. They either have, quite possibly, a Counter-Strike or a Jedi mind trick. And so you're like, okay, I'll attack with this guy or I'll defend with this guy. And you're thinking either he gets Jedi mind tricked or when I try to force lightning that Luke, he's going to counter it. So you're hoping the Jedi mind trick you so you can still kill Luke. So it really is memorizing all of the different in-battle cards. So you have to know Akbar. You have to know Backstabber. You have to know Force Lightning. You have to know Force Choke is free. You know, that might be coming your way even if they have zero.
Talon Roll
Deflection is free. That might be coming your way.
Talon Roll is free.
Talon Roll is free, exactly. So many cards that it's important to memorize how much they cost and what all can come in mid-battle. All right, so hopefully you'll be able to use that information like I have, because especially in this game, information is key. When you have less decision points, you need to have all the information to make those decisions. So, Ben, I hear you've been working up a new Rebel deck, and I believe we played it last weekend, and it got crushed. So why don't you tell us a little bit about it? Let's start with, what pods are you running?
So the current objective sets that I'm running is just two of the following objectives. So I'm running two of objective 1, 4, 8, 11, and 12. And so one is Luke. And so Luke is great because having targeted strike as a light side is really important, especially if you're going against some type of Sith deck or any deck where your opponent might be sitting back and playing defense a lot. So Luke can come in and target even somebody who's not participating in the engagements. 4 has red 5 in it, and so red 5 is one of those really key cards in a Rebel deck, I feel like, because it has the non-edge battle dependent objective damage, and also that pod has R2-D2 in it, so that's another resource. Objective 8, I just read this out loud. Objective 8 has another resource, has some Y-Wings in it, so Y-Wings are good. It's again more objective damage, at least one that's not edge dependent, and it has red 2, and red 2 can be really strong, especially comboed with the fourth card that's good in this objective, which is Rebel Assault, because you can then clear off focus after red 2 is attacked and have him attack again. And to top off this objective, I have to say this is must be one of the more clutch objectives now I'm looking at it, because the Defense of Yavin 4 objective allows you to reduce the cost of your vehicles that you're playing, allowing you to get them out for cheaper by discarding cards from your hand. You want to have a first turn home one? I've done it before by discarding 3 cards and only paying 2 resources for it, which can sometimes be really a huge game changer right away, because it gives you options to then to use other cards in your hand if you have that ability to. Objective 11, you know, is really strong. It has home one in it. I just mentioned how good home one is. It has another resource. So we've already talked about every pod so far has a resource in it, which has been really key, as well as another Y-Wing and a target of opportunity. And then the last pod I use is Draw Their Fire, which is objective 12, which has Akbar, Fleet Command Center, which I've really liked, and then a couple more fighter-type units, X-Wing and X-Wing Escort.
Okay, so let me ask you a couple questions. The first thing I noticed, sure. So it has 8 one-cost resources, and it also has 2 three-cost resources, so technically it has 10 resources. Was this intentional, or was this more, I'm putting good cards together, oh, cool, I've got 10 resources?
It happened more serendipitously, where I was like, I think this is the type of Rebel deck I want. I want some fighters, I want home one, I want to be able to do objective damage pretty consistently. And then it was, oh, look, here are 6 one-cost resources, a zero-cost resource in the form of R2-T2, and then a 3-cost resource in the Fleet Command Center, which then has the shielding ability, which I personally really like.
Okay, yeah, because when I think of Rebel, I don't think of needing a lot of resources because they have so many cheap guys. But then, on the flip side, when I think of Rebel, I don't like to play Draw Their Fire because I feel like I'm never going to have 3 back for Akbar. Fleet Command Center costs 3, it's too expensive, but if you're going to have all those resources, then maybe that works out a little bit better.
So far, in every game I've played with this, so I haven't played a ton, and I'm hoping to play more on Wednesday this week, I've had Fleet Command Center first turn in my hand and played it, and it has been a huge clutch card every game.
Yeah, the shielding alone to me is phenomenal. I mean, we've talked about this before, that shielding and protect are the 2 best keywords. So being able to put shielding on anyone you want at the beginning of your turn is pretty clutch. Being able to just stick one right on Red 5, who's pretty vulnerable, giving him a shield really helps.
Yeah. And it's really funny. I'm looking over these cards and the cards that are in these objectives, and I think this is a really good deck. I didn't get to play last week, so it's not really fresh in my mind how well the decks have done in the past or how well this deck has done specifically. But now I'm looking at it, I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, I don't know how this deck ever loses. How do I ever lose with this deck? I mean, I have a better idea now of how I lose with that deck. But so far, looking at these objectives just kind of in a vacuum. It's got a lot of hitting power. It's got some staying power. It's got ability to generate quite a bit of resources that, can give you quite a big advantage over the course of the game.
Yeah, I really like a lot about the deck. One thing I would say, if you're playing a Rebel deck, are you at all regretful of your decision to play Pod 4, which is Red 5's pod, over the other pod with Rebel Assault in it?
No. Mobilize the Squadron, right? That's the one that
yes.
has. And so with Mobilize the Squadron, yeah, you get the resources really quick. But like I said, I've tried to mitigate that by having resources in the draw deck itself. And like I said before, I'm always really paralyzed by Rebel Assault. And so I don't know if I had four in my deck, I'd just probably be keeping three of them in my hand, never being able to play them because I'm not sure how to play the resources for them and keep them back and also be putting out as many cards as I can each turn. Because that's really a lot of the key here, right? We've talked about this in terms of Rebel. It's about keeping vehicle fighter units on the board because those Y-Wings and A-Wings and X-Wings don't persist for very long. And so you need to be able to keep replenishing them. And that gets kind of pricey, even with the Defense of Yavin 4 objective, even with all of these resources that you can get on the board, it still takes a lot. And so to repopulate the board and then have enough for Rebel Assault doesn't always happen. So I don't think having four would be that good for the deck.
Yeah, I think also the pod as a whole is pretty lackluster. Rookie Pilot is not great. Trench Run, I didn't like before, and with the new rulings on it, I really don't like Trench Run. It just doesn't seem like a great pod. One pod that I know our listeners are just up in arms over is Pod 9. I mean, you specifically said, I love Luke in this because he gives you targeted strike, and Pod 9 would give you heavy blaster emplacements to give you essentially more damage that you can put onto the board. So what was your decision process in not including what some have considered to be pretty much the best pod?
As much as I like the heavy blaster emplacement, two of the three cards in the pod I feel like are completely useless unless you have the heavy blaster emplacement out already. And so I just mean in terms of Battle Engineers is a really not great card. It's an okay card. It does have to pull some double duty by allowing you to clear off, if the heavy blaster emplacements aren't out, by clearing off focus on some of your other enhancements. But I really have no love for Mon Mothma. I think compared to something like Mahdi, who is really efficient, Mon Mothma just doesn't have the efficiency you need to make it something worthwhile. I mean, the A-Wing is just kind of a run-of-the-mill card. It's good, allows you to draw when you strike, but it still only has that one health. There are plenty of other starfighters that have only one health, and it has the heated battle. I mean, overall, the pod isn't terrible. I just don't feel like it synergizes very well with the deck I was trying to construct at the time.
Yeah, I can understand that. The one thing I really like about the pod with your deck is the objective letting you draw a card, because you're talking about this need to repopulate so much. It would be really nice going into the dark player's turn if you had another card for that edge battle in your hand.
You do need to repopulate often. There are times, though, where you can start getting and having the ships persist on the table for longer. So, yes, the Y-Wing might leave play pretty quickly, and yes, the A-Wing might leave play pretty quickly. But things like the X-Wing, which has two health capacity, and Red 2 and Red 5 and Home 1 and Luke, when you're adding shields to them using the Fleet Command Center, you're able to let them be on the board a little bit longer, which allows you to build up your characters on the board, which means that eventually you kind of turns the tide, and instead of playing all your cards right away, from your hand to try and get the board under control, you're just keeping them all in your hand. And then all of a sudden you don't play any cards and you have six cards in your hand, and your opponent's like, this is going to be a problem.
So if our listeners are just throwing their hands in the air and saying, Ben is crazy, I love his deck, but I have to put Pod 9 in, I'm not crazy like Ben, what pod would you take out to make room for Pod 9? I'm looking at it and I'm saying probably Pod 12.
Because
Akbar's great, but he's more of a, unnecessary card.
That would be the only one I could recommend at all in good faith and say that if you had to play 9, the only one you could take out was 12. And I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to put 9 in there.
Yeah, I'm going to back your decision on that one. I'm just not a fan anymore of Pod 9. I think it's the evolution of the game. I mean, in our first podcast, I was the guy going, oh my goodness, Pod 9 is the best. Emplacement's broken. And here we are 14 weeks later, and I'm saying, I don't even mind the emplacement. I mean, so I put a damage on one of my terrible characters. Big deal.
Yeah, that's probably the evolution of away from when we first started playing, where it's like, oh, I got Beater in my hand, I'll play him out there all by himself. And then the light-sided player comes along and is like, oh, I'll put down two emplacements, that does two damage. Oh, I put down Luke, and oh, is your Vader dead already, right? I mean, that was always what made the emplacements like really, really kind of brutal to play against. And nowadays it's kind of like, oh, I'll play six characters before I play Darth Vader, and there's a lot of meat shield to absorb the damage coming that way.
Yeah, definitely. I'm actually liking your deck quite a bit looking at it, and I might try it this week also in our last.
Can you understand why when we played on Saturday, it was really the lowest possible way the deck could be?
See, like, I don't remember exactly what happened, except for that I crushed you so hard it was almost as if we didn't play.
It was similar to that. I will attest to the fact that it had everything to do that you got both of your Force Lightnings very early in the game. While I didn't have the supply of fighter units, I just kept getting some of my big cards, right? I got Luke first turn and really didn't have any options to play it. I got Akbar second turn, really didn't have any options to play it. And you were like, every time a character came down in focus, you were like, oh, Force Lightning, gone. I was like, oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, and that's why I like the Jedi deck so much, is I feel like you can put a big character down and then have Counterstroke in your hand or put C-3PO down also, and they're just not quite as vulnerable to dark side's tricks. When you play Rebel, it really feels like you're just like, okay, I'm putting stuff down and I'm hoping you can't crush it.
Right. And so it sometimes happens that way. And, you know, if you hadn't had your Force Lightnings in your hand right away, Home 1 would have stayed on the board a lot longer than it did. I would have, you know, if I had gotten, remember there was one hand, I don't know if you remember, I drew a hand of six and I played all six cards, four of them being fighters, one of them was Home 1. I just kind of went, played them all out. You went, wow, you might actually have a chance here because I suddenly had more characters on the table than you. I struck with Home 1 and you're like, oh, Force Lightning. And then the game shifted completely back in the other way. But at that one moment, if that had happened either earlier or more consistently, which it normally does with a deck and just didn't that time, I feel like it would have had a nice run, at least given you some more pause for concern as opposed to being like, oh, I have this game in the bag, which you definitely had for most of it.
So if we're thinking that the big problem for this deck is Force Lightning, have you thought at all about subbing in, say, Pod 2, where you would get Yoda, a chance to lock down the Force, you would get a Counterstroke, maybe in for Pod 12?
Maybe. You lose the Fleet Command Center that way. It shifts the whole metric of the deck, so as opposed to being a Rebel deck where you run the Jedi affiliation, in that case you would be a Jedi deck where you run the Rebel affiliation because you've switched, which is the more dominant affiliation objective numbers.
That's true. You could maybe do one of them and go 5-5.
Which I think is probably even a worst case scenario. I don't know if I ever want to do 5-5.
I was running a 5-5 deck and it was actually working out fine for me.
I've had, that would be one of those situations where I feel like it would be asking for drawing the wrong series of objectives in that first turn. Getting four of the one that matches the house affiliation and then having five objectives that I can't pull anything from.
Certainly would be possible.
Much more likely, I suppose.
So let me follow up with this then. This is one of the things I noticed with your deck. It seems like it has a synergy problem. So you have Pod 1, which has Luke, and then it has Trust Your Feelings, which are both amazing. And then you have Pod 4, which has Red 5, and it has Double Strike, which only works on characters. So you basically have Trust Your Feelings and Double Strike, which only work with characters and are amazing, but you really only have Luke as your viable character.
So Admiral Akbar.
Have you run into any synergy problems with that?
I have. So those cards tend to, I would just point out, Akbar is also a character. As much as he looks like a fish, he's also a character.
And Mon Mothma is as well. But I'm talking about characters that you're dropping in.
And hoping to do damage with.
Right, that you would want to put enhancements on, that you want to double strike.
Yep, so I have run into it, so I think that would be a worst-case scenario for this deck. It's only four cards that only work with characters, right? You listed them off. It was the double strike, and it was Trust Your Feelings. Both of them, which I don't think off the top of my head, have terrible... Oh, I guess double strike does. Terrible force icons. I mean, they're the type of things
they're
that
both
I,
ones, by the way.
Yeah, they're both ones. They're types of things that maybe I would get rid of really quickly, just dumping them out of my hand as fast as possible. Just kind of in the edge battle traps that people like to play.
Okay, so you would not hold them for Luke just because, you know, it's not really worth it to.
Right. I would not hold the cards in my hand waiting for the character. If the character was there and it was fine, it's fine. But you're right, it's four dead cards in there.
So for me, my question then is, that completely changes my evaluation of Pod 4. I like Pod 4 so much because it has Red 5, which is amazing, R2-D2, which is good, and Double Strike, which is amazing. But if we're relegating Double Strike to so terrible I toss it as a bluff in an edge battle, then it's not a very good pod. It's just basically Red 5 is phenomenal. So have you thought about maybe changing that pod out for, say, the Yoda pod, where you would have a little bit more synergy, or some other pod like Pod 5, where you would get Jedi Guardians, so you have more characters on the board? Or are you just okay with that because Red 5 is so great in a Rebel aggro deck?
Well, now that you're quizzing me, I don't think putting 5 in here would be good. I think you went in for the same problem. If you switch out this pod for Objective 5 and have Protectors, you still only have two characters in the deck. So they're not, you know, a couple weenies, but you're not then protecting. Right, that's the reason why you don't play Protectors with Rebels to begin with, because they can't protect your fighter stuff. I am seeing, and I could be convinced, and I might have to try this out, subbing out Draw Their Fire Objective 12 with Akbar and putting in the Yoda pod. I can see that. I feel like maybe synergistically it will help things. You then don't run into the problems with Heroic Sacrifice, where that you need a vehicle, so if you happen to get all your characters, or you're playing a Sith deck and they don't have vehicles, you might, you know, get better mileage from the Yoda pod from Pod 2 than having that in there. So I think that you've convinced me of, and I might try that out. As we're trying to put in the Protectors, I think that would be a bad idea.
Yeah, I agree.
So that is the problem, right? I mean, that's why. Here it is. This is why you can't do that. As I was saying, if you sub out Draw Their Fire, get rid of the Akbar pod, to put in Yoda, you have to switch the affiliation, which then means you can't have the Red 5 pod in your deck anymore. Boom. That's why you can't do it.
Yeah, unless you were going to go with a 5-on-5. But I think probably it's not a great choice anyway, because as you were saying, the Fleet Command Center is so great because it protects those little weenie ships. Yoda's not really an offensive character anyway.
No, definitely not.
Double Strike doesn't synergize him with that well. Trust Your Feelings doesn't synergize him with that well. So I think what we're probably left with is a couple of cards that usually look amazing, but you just have to know your deck. In this particular deck, they're not, and you just got to toss them.
You just got to toss them. Unless Luke happens to be on the table.
Unless you get Luke, then you keep him, and you surprise someone, and you just wreck them.
Right. But, you know, like I said, I mean, overall, I like the deck. It's been doing okay. So far, I've only gotten to play 3 games with this exact iteration of the deck. It's gone 2-1. The one time it lost, it completely just was terrible, and I didn't get the cards in any order that would be worthwhile. And then the other ones, one of them I completely rolled on. The other one was a game against you, against an Imperial deck that you were trying to play. And I feel like I did really well on that one too, where it was just one of those situations where I was just weakening objectives throughout the whole game and just took them all out in one turn. And there wasn't much you could do about it. I think I actually finished off on that one with the Rebel Assault. You were like, oh, I defended, or I did this attack and I got the dial up to 9. You're like, I might win next turn. And I was like, no, Rebel Assault, that's the end of the game.
I do remember that, and I do remember not liking that.
Yeah, there you go.
So, real quick, looking at your list, it looks like you tried Pod 6 for a little while, which is Redemption's Pod.
Yes.
And were you trying that mainly just because Redemption is another big ship?
Yes. I was trying Redemption because it had more of the blast, of the objective damage. It has 2 non-edge-dependent unit damage icons, as well as 2 edge-dependent blasts. And so my hope had been that I would win the edge battle enough that it would work and allow me to do more damage to objectives. But even more so, I felt like this was another card that only synergized with characters. And with the limited number of characters that I was playing, it was just as hurtful as counter. So I not only had the double strike and Jedi lightsaber and trust your feelings, I also had Redemption, while it was a good ship with a lot of health capacity, that also didn't help with characters. So I felt like I had to take that out and go with something that had less dependent edge battle objective damage.
Right. Not to mention that pod has Return of the Jedi. It has Force Rejuvenation.
Right.
It has a number of cards that work specifically with characters.
Specifically.
Yeah. So I think that was a good choice pulling that out. Good job, Ben, trying out a Rebel deck. I'm happy to see a little innovation. Hopefully we can find a second really good light side deck, because I got to say, a lot of people in our meta are playing that Jedi deck. And I have no problem with people playing the same deck. My only problem is if it's stifling their own creativity.
Yeah.
So a new feature that we're going to talk about this week is something called helping new players. So if you're an experienced player, you might want to forward this podcast about 1 minute. And what we're going to focus on today are traits. Traits are the little word in italics underneath the icons for your card, and they give you useful information. I see this all the time. Someone will have Forgotten Heroes out. They'll throw down Believer in the Old Ways. The person looks like a Jedi. She says Force on her, and they draw a card. I say, excuse me, what are you doing? Oh, this is a Force user. No, it's not. Yeah, it is. Look, she looks like a Force user. Yes, I realize she looks like a Force user, but her trait is Force sensitive, not Force user. Those are actually different in this game. It doesn't go by how they look. These little traits are very critical for telling you important things about each card.
And so this happens all across the board. There are lots of cards that are specific to certain types of traits. And so that's a good example of one where you're looking for Force user. There's only a few Force users in the decks. Those cards are limited to Luke and Yoda and Obi-Wan and Jedi in hiding. Those are your only Force users. Those are the ones that you're looking for to trigger that reaction. But this is the same. You see this type of thing go throughout a lot of other cards. So there are specifically cards that target characters. And then there are very common cards that aren't characters. Right, Tiny?
Yep. So for instance, C-3PO cannot be hit by Force choke. This is amazing. He's not a character. He's a droid. However, C-3PO can also not be protected by Guardian of the Peace, who protects a character, not a droid. And this is going to be a little tough for some people at first, because C-3PO is a character in the movies, so he should be able to be protected. But he is specifically labeled a droid, which in this game is different from a character. They are both units. They're not both characters.
It's the same way with Jedi Mind Trick, which targets characters, which means that units that are vehicles, so anything that's like a TIE fighter or the Devastator, those cards can't be hit by Jedi Mind Trick, which makes what makes it slightly less awesome of a card when you're playing Jedi against Navy.
Yeah, and I've actually gotten burned one time really bad by the fact that Mind Trick only hits characters, because the interrogation droid, for some reason, when I look at that card, I see that Imperial guy in the background following the droid, and I think it's him. And so I had this whole plan around, okay, He's going to attack with the interrogation droid. I'm going to mind trick it. Then it can't tactics me. And I went to do it. My opponent said, that's weird. You're mind tricking a droid. And I kind of stopped for a minute and went, droid? Oh my goodness, that's right. It's the droid. It's not the guy. Duh, that's right in the title. And it completely screwed me that game.
It does say that in the title.
Yeah, but it sure does.
You should really learn to read the cards.
Yes, that is certainly on me, not my opponent. But it is something that you need to remember, that these traits are critical. Know the traits of all the cards. Know which cards interact with which traits.
Very important.
Okay, so we're going to move on to my favorite part of the show, and that is the pod quiz. And it's really my favorite when I'm not on the clock. So this week, Ben is on the clock. I will randomly, wink, wink, generate a pod. Oh, I came up with one. Pod 30. Ben, what's in pod 30?
Pod 30. Let me think. I feel like there should be Jeopardy music right now.
Thinking, thinking. Ben is thinking.
Let's take a stab in the dark. I'm going to try and reason it out a little bit. So it's at the end of the dark side set of objectives. I don't think it's the Boba Fett one, which makes me think that it's one of the neutral objectives. So that leaves it either being the Espo Trooper pod or the reconnaissance mission pod.
Let's stop you for a moment and work on your logic skills. How many pods are in this game?
36.
36. And what numbers would Espo Troopers and reconnaissance mission be?
35 and 36.
And what number did I say?
You said 30.
Yes. Okay.
Okay, let's try again then. So it's a Navy pod.
We are on the right track now.
We're on the right track now.
Stay on target. Take your time. Our listeners aren't going anywhere.
I'm going to say, completely at random, that it's Defense Protocol.
It is Defense Protocol.
I don't know any of the cards that are in that set. I know how much you love that objective. That's all I was going on that one.
Just to be clear, though, it will get edited out, but Ben took about 3 minutes to come up with that.
There was a lot of silence. As for the cards that are in it, maybe, I think I know one. It might be the TIE Attack Squadron.
Yes. Is that the centerpiece of the pod, I would say.
Okay, so then in that case, I think I can then answer another one. There's probably a target of opportunity in there?
There is not.
Is it a heat of battle?
There is not.
Is it a twist of fate?
There is not.
I'm sorry.
There is a twist of fate. Yes.
Oh, there is a twist of fate. So it is one fate card. All right, so I have two. Is there a regular TIE fighter?
There is.
All right, that's three. I'm not going to get the other two. I concede.
Okay. The other two are Tail and Roll and Death from Above.
That makes sense.
Yep. Well, good job, Ben. I mean, it took you a while, but you randomly guessed correctly.
I did randomly guess correctly. And then once I randomly guessed correctly, I randomly guessed correctly again. So.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Pretty good.
And I will admit, I did not randomly choose that pod. I was purposely trying to stump Ben this week because he had been looking so good. All right, so let's talk about our card of the week this week. And it's getting a little bit harder. We've had quite a few cards. And so I'm going to throw out there one that's fairly obvious. But I'm going to put Lightsaber Deflection out there. I love this card. As someone who plays the Jedi, this is one of those absolute back-breaking cards. You go into a battle knowing you have this in your hand, so it looks like maybe Luke is going to die. But lo and behold, bada boom, you redirect one of those damage to their guy who only has one health left. They die. You come back around, questionable contacts. You pull the damage off Luke. You kill another guy. That one card can absolutely change the game. And it has for me both as the light side and as the dark side. You're thinking, do they have the deflection? Do they have the deflection? It has to go into your thought process.
It's a good card. It's one of those cards that I really miss when I'm not playing that pod.
Yes, I almost feel like I need to not play Jedi for a while because I've just gotten too used to having counters and tricks that I'm not sure I can even play a Rebel deck anymore without having any sort of tricks.
So I have a card of the week that's really going to make Tiny upset because he really dislikes it when I pick terrible cards for my card of the week. So my card of the week this week is going to be, are you ready for this? It's going to blow your mind.
I'm already pulling my hair out. Go ahead. Yep.
Repair Droid.
That's not a terrible card.
And so there's a couple things about Repair Droid that I like. One, it's a droid, so it can't get hit by Force Choke. Another one, it's a 1-for-1, and then it has the text action, remove 1 damage from a target vehicle limit once per turn. And so I really like this going into a battle with something like Home 1 or Red 2 or Red 5, where I know some damage is going to be done, but the Repair Droid is just sitting there on the side. And so as long as it's a multi-character type of damage, right? So you go in, Red 5 has a shield on it, you do 2 damage to it, and then you focus your character, so now Red 5 is still alive. I can then take an action to use Repair Droid to bring Red 5 back up to full capacity, strike with Red 5. You still then have another character that can do 2 damage to kill it. So I really like Repair Droid for that reason. On top of that, Repair Droid has 1 Force icon. He doesn't have any other icons, so I can just commit him to the Force and use his ability whenever I want, and he's just a 3/4 Force icon sitting on the table.
Yeah, it's funny how this game works with that. Like, I've seen a lot of people complain about C-3PO. Why does he have an icon? And I always think, like, well, C-3PO is awesome. He's in every movie. He's always a critical player. And then you run across R2-D2. The Repair Droid.
Well, I mean, you run across R2-D2, right? And R2-D2 doesn't have a Force icon. But yes, this Repair Droid does.
And he looks like R2-D2.
And he looks like R2-D2.
He's like a bad imitation of him, only better. That's weird. but he is pretty phenomenal. What makes him really amazing, of course, is that since it's once per turn, it's not once per your turn, it's once per turn. So if you get 2 damage on home one, so you take off 1 damage on your turn, take off 1 damage off your opponent's turn, suddenly you have a fresh and ready home one when your turn rolls back around.
Exactly.
I like him. The one downside of him is a lot of Rebel ships only have 1 damage capacity. And so in that way, he's one of these cards that's sometimes pointless. Unless you can get that home one out, unless you can get a red five out and keep him on the table, he'll often sort of sit there and say, I wish I could help you.
Yeah. I hope he escalates pretty nicely with future sets, with bigger, you know, we already know going into it that the Blockade Runner only has 3 health capacity. So it's another weak.
Yeah. And, Wedge looks really great in his speeder, and I think the Repair Droid will help him keep alive or stay alive a little bit longer as well. All right, so the last thing we want to talk about today is the combo of the week. And this is something that I had heard about, but I hadn't seen it in person, and I thought, this combo probably won't happen very often. But in our league, Neil was able to pull it off against me, and it was pretty darn good. And this combo is the Battlefield Engineer and the Heavy Emplacement? No, not the Emplacement, but Trust Your Feelings. So let's say you have Luke with Trust Your Feelings. Luke attacks. You pull a focus off of him, put it on Trust Your Feelings. Luke attacks again. You attack with the Battlefield Engineer, pull one off Trust Your Feelings. Luke attacks again. That is pretty darn strong.
3 strikes with Luke is pretty amazing.
I believe the saying is 3 strikes and you're out, and pretty much the dark side is out at that point.
That's a lot of direct damage that you can do right there.
Yeah, so Neil pulled it off. I was very impressed. The problem is it's not that easy to get all these pieces together. I mean, not only do you have to get the Battlefield Engineer and the Trust Your Feelings, you have to get a good enough character then to put Trust Your Feelings on. That character has to stay alive long enough to make it worth it. So it's a fairly elaborate combo, but if you pull it off, it's pretty devastating.
Well, that's it for this episode, everybody. I hope that it was at least somewhat educational, maybe even a little entertaining. Time is ticking down towards our first set of regional seasons for the Star Wars LCG. You know, we'll hopefully have at least, I guess we'll only have 1 chapter pack, right? If it's being released potentially as soon as next week, as when this podcast gets released, we might have a new chapter pack. But it will be the chapter pack for March. So we'll probably only have that one for the first regional that we're going to be hosting at KingdomCon. So, you know, if anybody out there in listener land, I guess is what it's called nowadays with podcasts, is actually thinking about coming from far afield, you know, let Tiny and I know either on the Facebook group or through our email address, which is smugglersdenpodcast@gmail.com. And we'd be happy to at least coordinate with you. Maybe if you needed a ride, I know I'm driving down to San Diego. Not saying that I will give everybody a ride who needs a ride from San Diego International. But if there's a couple people who are coming at the same time from far afield and they didn't want to rent a car, you know, there's a lot of us as part of this meta, and we're all pretty nice guys. And may the force be with you.